Peter. Can you hear me, Peter?
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now, Peter. You had us wrapped in a cocoon of horror hoping you would call
no,
in.
No. Your phony baloney phone system had me wrapped up in a cocoon of horror.
Oh, it did. Joe Rodriguez is on with me. He's my co-host. He's from Jersey. He was having the same problems you were having, so while
God,
I was calling you,
was
trying to straighten it out, yeah.
Well, he's lucky I'm not there because I'd beat him.
Well,
I'm glad I'm on the phone then.
I switch over to my landline. Is that all right?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
It's actually better, I think.
All
yeah,
right.
I think it
okay.
is, too. That's what I use when I call into the show.
All right.
All righty. Well, hey, just tell us a little bit about your family's boxing history. I mean, a lot of people don't really know what that history is, and they should. You had a grandfather that was very accomplished as a boxer.
Well, it started back in the 20s. My grandfather was on the 1928 Olympic team. And back then, you did not have to go through, you know, the Olympic trials, the Olympic box-offs, yada, yada, yada. If you...
Yeah, you were talking about the Olympic boxing trials
yeah,
when your grandfather
well,
was in it.
What it was back then, you if you won the Nationals, that's it. You were on the team. You follow me, you didn't have to go through all these different tournaments.
Yeah. Well, and then I also, if I remember right, your father fought the first card ever at the Boston Garden, didn't he, in 1928?
Yeah, so my grandfather, he after that, he turned pro, and one of his early pro fights, he fought in the opening night of Boston Garden, like a four round bout or a six round bout, on a championship undercard.
Yeah, and then your father fought for the heavyweight championship.
Then my father sold out the Garden. I'm gonna say probably at least 10 times. My dad fought Floyd Patterson for the heavyweight championship world. And
there was a lot of knockdowns in that fight too, wasn't there?
Well, see, they got away with a couple of things because it was in Toronto, Canada. They got away with 6 ounce gloves and no 3-knockdown rule.
Wow!
So
yeah.
My dad was knocked down 12 times. I mean, a 6 ounce glove, a featherweight today doesn't even wear 6 ounce gloves. Never mind a heavyweight.
Looking at your father's career, I see that he had several common opponents with one Muhammad Ali. I'm seeing he fought Tunney Hunsaker and he fought Patterson.
Yeah, George Logan, Tunney Hunsaker,
Brian London.
I mean, Dad. Your dad sparred with Ali old school when he was Cassius Clay.
Your dad also fought Oscar Bonavina, which, could not have been easy.
Bonavina won 15 rounds with Ali when he came back from taking a stand against Vietnam. That was Ali's second fight after Corey.
Yeah, yeah. So what drew you to boxing? Was it your father and grandfather's
influence? That's obvious. I mean, too obvious of a question. I mean, I grew up in a small town called Medfield. I screamed that 20 years ago. I screamed it loud and hard. Medfield! Growing up in a small town called Medfield, 18 miles west of Boston. There was know, you go up in a town like that, you know, the bell rings at the end of the school day, what are you going to do? You're going to go play baseball or basketball or football like all the other kids. There were no boxing gyms around. But when I was like 7, 8 years old, I caught up in the act and I found my dad on the cover of Sports Illustrated, the cover of Ring Magazine. His title fight program with Patterson. I mean, all these magazines, all this memorabilia upstairs. And I just became a boxing freak after that. I just couldn't get boxing out of my head. You know, and I'm confident in saying my dad was my first sports hero. But, you know, again, where you gonna box in Medfield? So I didn't, you know, myself and my little brother, my little brother Snubby, who also made quasi-famous on pay-per-view and other TV shows talking about him, me and Snubby, you know, on the weekends, in the winter, we did a little bit of CYO boxing when we were kids. You know, like six Saturdays in the wintertime, barely getting your feet wet with boxing. And you know, we always grew up with a heavy bag and a speed bag in the cellar. So, like, I was that classic wannabe. But when I finally got to college, I was at Bridgewater State College in Bridgewater, Mass, which is right next to Brockton, the city of champions. So all of a sudden, it all fit together. And you know, I flunked out my freshman year party, and it was the first year I didn't play a sport in, like, whatever, 8 years. And I flunked out. I got back in on academic probation. And so that summer, I started boxing in Natick, Mass, and Framingham, Mass. So then when school started in the fall, my dad had the connections. The famous Hagler-Leonard fight, super fight, had just happened in late April 87. So the Petro Gym in Brockton was jumping because of Marvin. And I was like, Dad, take me out to that gym. It's a hop, skip, and a jump in the dorms. You'll see, I'll use my time wiser there than fooling around, and my grades will get better, and I'll graduate. So if nothing else, my only 21 amateur fights basically got me my college education.
Yeah.
If I didn't box, I never would have made it through college.
All right. Let's see. When did you start working with your trainer, Vinny Vecchione?
Well, see, that's funny. See, at the beginning of my last year of school, 1990, Vinny Vecchione was waiting for me outside the Petrinelli gym. And I come out and he says, hey, look, you know, like, now Vinny had been out of the fight game, let's say 9 years, 10 years. Vinny was doing other extracurricular activities.
I've read a little bit about that.
yeah. Well, you know, I mean, but it's not my place to comment on his life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I can comment on my own. And Vinny was waiting for me, and it was another fighter by the name of Paul Poirier. Paul Poirier had been out of the fight game for like 15 years. So he had these two guys doing the comeback thing. They said, Peter, will you come down to Whitman next to Brockton and spar with Paul? And I said, sure, you know. I loved, you know, at that time, I had, say 18, 19 amateur fights. And I just loved boxing. I wanted to fight. I was so young and inexperienced at boxing. I figured the more I fought, the more I sparred, the more I competed, the better I could only get better. So I went down and sparred with this guy, Paul. And Paul was 26-0 when he had stopped. So, you know, he was a middleweight. Now he was a small heavyweight. And this time I was what they called an amateur's heavyweight. I was 201. Back then, the heavyweight division, you know, amateur was, you know, if you were over 201, you were a super heavyweight.
Yeah.
So, I sparred with Paul quite a bit. And Vinny says, Jesus, this kid's the best young heavyweight prospect in the area. I want this kid. And the owner of the gym was Cliff Fibbin. And the South Shore Boxing Club is still open down in Whitman, Mass. But Cliff said, Vinny said, this kid's the best young prospect in the area. Cliff was like, really? You think so? He goes, trust me, I can do something with this kid. So, sure enough, the Pensionellis ended up getting a family feud over Irish Steve Collins. Steve Collins was with them at that time. And something to do with his contract, and Steve ended up going back to, and fighting all the big super fights and winning the WBO title with Eubanks and all those guys.
Nigel Benn, all those guys. Yeah.
Well, it was more than one way to skin a cat. The Pensionellis were trying to make him force him to re-sign a contract. I sparred quite a bit with Steve. I'm grateful to Steve. I knocked out the world nation ranked number one contender in my eighth amateur fight. It was the kid's 88th fight. And I sparred with Steve for a month, and I knocked the kid out in 93 seconds. Then I beat Bobby Harris, the other number one ranked contender from Worcester. I beat him in my 10th amateur fight, and it was like Bobby's 60th amateur fight. I was always the less experienced guy trying to get ahead.
Yeah. Your debut was against a guy named Van Dorsey. What do you remember about that fight?
I knocked him out in 20 seconds.
Didn't he knock you down early, though?
It's funny you say that because, there's a famous DA here. The famous DA in Boston. He was the referee, Jerry Leone. Jerry's dad, was real tight with my dad. It was like a small world, but you wouldn't want to paint the deal with the McNeilies of boxing, I was pushed down. The guy was 6'5", and he pushed me down. The guy could have busted. The guy was big, yes, but he could have busted a grape. He could have knocked me down if he tried to, the poor bastard. But, I was pushed down, and they did. They called it a knockdown. It was pathetic. I got all my fights on DVD right here. We laugh when we watch it, But anyway, so we ended up going on a march. Vinny Vecchione did me old school. Vinny Vecchione was an old school fight guy. We fought 37 fights in 44 months. Fights in 44 months.
That's a lot of fights, Peter.
If you figure it out, it was a fight every 5 weeks for less than 4 years.
Yeah. But the one thing I didn't know about you that I learned from doing some research for this interview was that why don't you talk a little bit about Rocky V and how you almost landed the role as Tommy Gunn?
Back in '89, I just turned 20. I only had 6-7 amateur fights. I had 8 amateur fights, and a casting call, form letter went out to all the boxing gyms in the country.
Yeah.
And Stallone knew the Pensionellis, from Hagler, and his casting corporation sent on a form letter to Jim. One night, Goody comes out and says, Peter, this is you, a 21-year-old talented white boxer, 200 pounds. This is you. And I was at the college, living in his dorms, boxing in Brockton nights, and I sent out a American Express letter with a film of me boxing with some snapshots in, and did the old Hail Mary, Our Father before I dropped it in the box. And then within within 2 or 3 days, they were playing tickets at my dorm room door to go to the MGM Studios in New York City for a screen test. And at the time, I did not know who else was involved. I did not know that Toni Morrison was up for the role, but all I heard was that there were like 3 other guys, and one of them was a boxer. And you know, that was, I figured I had it wrapped. I was getting this part. I figured I had it wrapped. But whatever. It didn't happen. And Toni Morrison, it did. And, a lot of people say that Stallone at that point got Toni Morrison on the juice, and which attributed to a lot of his physical problems in his life. So and I know that Tom was also had his dealings with booze and drugs and. Just throwing steroids. God bless him and his family. You know what I mean?
He was a good fighter.
The guy passed way too young.
Yeah, he was a good fighter too.
And also he got HIV and complications from that. And I mean the guy had quite a life story that he was leading. And God bless him and his family.
Hey, Peter, your first loss came in your 25th fight against Stanley Wright. That was a fight that you dominated until it was stopped and controversial.
Yeah. I was ahead 7 rounds of zip going in the 8th round, midway through the 8th round. I mean, I was cut bad. The cut took 60 stitches.
Wow.
I was cut bad. It had to be re-stitched. A couple times, it was bad, but whatever. We took the loss. There was a lot of jealousy. They were just developing that cut rule, and the guy was hitting me. He'd stiff, doing a double illegal tactic, stiff arming me with the left. He was 6'10", and swatting me with the heel with the laces, and cracked my. My eyebrow open. So it was a double illegal blow. It should have went to points, and I should have won. But like I said, they were just developing that whole system, and there was a lot of jealousy of my undefeated record, and whatever. Vinny Vecchione's old school. I was back. No guy would have invited me. 60 stitches over, you would have been fighting for 6 months. I was back in a ring fighting in 6 weeks. There was still a scab on the cut. We fought, and Don King was already looking at us. I fought 3 fights in 3 states in 3 weeks, all 3 knockouts. Don King said, wow, these guys mean business. Sign them up.
Yeah. Well, before we get to the Don King questions, I just want to remind everybody you're listening to NGSC Sports Radio. We're interviewing former heavyweight contender Peter McNeely. So, Peter, you brought up Don King a little bit. Tell us how you became involved with Don King.
Well, you'll never hear a bad word out of me about Don King. I love Don King. People have had their experiences with Don King, and good, bad, or indifferent. And I got nothing but good things to say about Don King. Again, I only had 3 fights with him, but I signed a 4-year deal with him, and I didn't get to that level where he could make so much money off me where I could be mistreated. So maybe in a way I was lucky. I don't know. But to get that Tyson fight, you got to deal with Don King.
Yep.
You know, I mean, at that time, you're talking 1994 when I signed my four-year deal with King. And then, obviously, the big fight with Tyson in 95. But you figure at that time, Don King was the number one promoter in boxing. Hands down. Hands down. And a photo finish between him and Aram. But the difference between him and Aram is King had a history of paying more than Aram. King had a history of paying more to the fighters than Aram. Don King paid out, made more millionaires of boxing than any other promoter ever in the history of boxing.
Well, you mentioned Mike Tyson, so let's talk about that. Tell us how that fight came about, and what were your feelings going into the fight?
Well, you know, it was kind of a funny deal. It almost didn't happen because in 19... Again, I signed a contract with King in June of 94. Now roll around to September. Oliver McCall knocks out Lennox Lewis. Lewis's first loss. And I was way up in upstate New York at a friend's place. And a friend of mine that was going to school up there, and Vinny says, "Peter, get your butt home quick. We got to be in New York City in the morning." And I did. I jumped, you know, I got in the car and drove 3.5-4 hours home. And the next thing I know, I'm playing in New York City with the Rainbow Room at Rockefeller Center. And Oliver Call and Don King come in with the championship belt. And all of a sudden, you know, King was back in the heavyweight picture. And they announced that day that I would be the first, Oliver Call's first title defense of that championship that he took from Lennox Lewis. And, you know, and that was like I had been the big fish locally. Big fish in New England for, you know, a little bit, of, you know, say 6 months, 8 months, you know. And now all of a sudden it hit like a national and worldwide level when I signed, you know, when I signed that contract. But say about a week later, like when I got home from New York, there was like, you know, there was a press card at my mom's house in Medfield. It was crazy. This was now a good dry run for things to come for me. You know, for the Tyson fight. And next thing I knew, like, after, you know, things calmed down a little bit, the WBC stepped in and said, "No, Peter McNeely is not ranked in the top 10. This contract is null and void. He's only ranked 12th in the world. The WBC rules say he must be ranked in the top 10. And, you know, so he's not fighting for the title." And so I was like, wah, crying. Dog, he's like, "Don't worry about it. Shut up. Don't worry about it. Tyson's getting out of March. I'm going to fight him instead. And there'll be more money and more prestige." You know, Vinny and Don, you're both like, "You're crying, you wuss." You know? It was actually kind of funny, you know? But, and another thing, you know, that all McCall at that time, oh boy, was he dead tough. I mean, that guy, you could hit the guy with a freaking cement mixer and he wasn't going down.
Yeah.
But you know,
going into the Tyson fight, did you have any fear entering the fight, and did you believe that you were going to win?
Well, did it look like I had any fear?
No, it didn't. That's what Joe opened the show up with when I was trying to get you on here, talking about how you went right at him.
You mean when I was trying to get past your security codes?
Yeah, see, you had a harder time with my security code than you did Mike Tyson.
hey, you know, tonight is the Tyson fight. It brings you to a funny story. I promised these kids from back home. I promised two guys that were like my guys from Fremont that I used to box with. Them two guys and these other guys from college. I promised them all that they were going to be in my entourage. But I promised these guys like 8 years earlier that I was going to make it to the big fight someday and they were going to be in my entourage. And I'm a man of my word. 8 years later, I had them same guys with me. And a couple of them, they tried to block from getting into the fight. The security was so tight. Speaking of security codes, the security was so tight in that fight that they tried to block these guys from getting in. I said, look, you know who I am? Hey, I ain't going to fucking fight unless these guys are coming in. You got me? I ain't fighting unless they're coming in. And sure enough, those same guys walked me into the ring. They still brag about that to this day.
So, the fight, I mean, so you didn't piss yourself like Bruce Seldon did. So, I mean, what was it?
But I say it just like Tyson says it. You know, fire and fear, man. It's that fear that makes a guy, it's what a guy does under the stress of fear that makes him a hero or a coward. I go forward, do what you're supposed to do. I don't go backwards like a coward. I go forward. Now, it didn't matter if I was fighting. To build up that record, yeah, hell yeah, I fought some bums. You know what I'm saying? I fought some bums my girlfriend on the next room could have beaten. You know? But I was scared before I got in every fight. But it was healthy fear. Healthy fear. If you didn't have that healthy fear, you shouldn't have been there at all. But
yeah.
You know, but I always had it. And as soon as that bell rang, I said it was the day I signed the contract to fight Mike Tyson. I said, I'm going right at him. And if nothing else, I can say this. At least I executed what I said I was going to do. Now, did I have the experience to hang with him at that level? Obviously, maybe not, but I'll tell you this. I'm the only one to attack him in his prime and back him up. I'm the only one.
Yeah.
After the Tyson fight, it seemed like things were different for you. Do you think it was a matter of you maybe being burned out from having so many fights so soon?
No. I ended up having 17 more fights after that fight. I had 50. The Tyson fight was my 38th fight. I ended up having a total of 54 pro fights, 47-7, 36 KOs, 25 first round knockouts. We like to go home early. But you know what? If there was any burnout, it was a burnout on my own of me, you know, not doing the right things. But there was no burnout from the boxing, the fighting, or the training. I had times when I'd get injured. I had the nagging injuries, and sometimes I had some big injuries that I fought through. I fought down the Mohegan Sun Casino in Connecticut in 98, April of 98. I broke my hand in the third round with three more rounds of broken and still won the fight easily, hands down, but I had to get the hand operated on. Got three titanium screws in there, and come back at that, keep fighting. The fight before that was in L.A., the fight was like, say, January 8th or 10th. And back here in Mass, it was New Year's Eve day. And I'm out doing road work, and there was a little bit of snow and ice on the ground. And halfway through a run, I slipped and fell on my back and my hip, knocked my hip out of place. Had just signed this new contract, for fights with this company that me and Wayne McCullough were like the two big names of the company. And we were fighting on Fox Sports Network and other different channels, lower level channels. But, you know, like, I knocked my freaking hip out of place. And I still fought the main event McCullough, but I was the co-feature McCullough, and I'm pulling out. They moved me up to the main event, and I just knocked my hip out of place like a 45 a week earlier. And I ended up waddling, you know, because it was winter time, and figure it was the heaviest I ever walked into a ring after I knocked my hip out of place. You can't jump rope. You can't run. You know, you go on the road, you eat three hots in a cot, you know. Next thing you know, I waddled into the ring at like 233, 234, the heaviest I ever fought at. But I ended up winning that fight. Then I won the fight where I broke my hand. I came back, you know, after the screws came out of the head. Came back and fought after that.
Well, after that, your last fight was probably a major event. I remember watching it on pay-per-view. I think it was a Bob Arum card.
You're wrong. That was on my last fight. I ended up having four more fights that day.
I was talking about your last high-profile fight, which was probably Eric Butterby Nish.
Yep. I ended up fighting Mike Bernardo for the WBF Heavyweight Championship of the World in Cape Town, South Africa, on 8 days' notice.
Yeah.
The last two pro fights were on 8 days' notice. The second last one was against the world's ranked number one contender, Henry Akawandi, 6'7", 250 pounds.
Yeah, you fought Brian Nielsen, too.
Fought Brian Nielsen as well. Nielsen could have busted a grape on his best day. Akawandi was the hardest I've been hit my whole career, but the gloves were smaller in Florida than they were in Vegas.
Yeah.
So that's all hindsight 2020 deal. But Bernardo was probably like I was the best shape I was ever in my life for the Bernardo fight. I was doing them for 10 weeks. I was doing a mini triathlon once a week. Once a week for 10 weeks, I would run 3 miles, bike 60 miles, then box. Do that once a week for 10 weeks, then dinner 5 days a week, I would run and box. And I was in the best shape of my life ever. But that trip to Cape Town on 8 days' notice killed me. My reflexes, my body were shot. At one point, you could see the Bernardo fight on YouTube. That was how we actually got a copy of it. He hit me a shot, and I was out. I was dead to the world. I was dead. I was gone. And I can't believe, like, to this day, watching that I actually got up, got to my feet as the guy says 9. I get to my feet, and obviously it was in Cape Town, so the guy says 9, and I'm off, and, you know, he waved it out, which was probably better off, trust me, because I was messed up. But, I mean, I can't believe, like, I beat the count. I was not KO'd. I was not, obviously I was KO'd, but legitimately, I was not KO'd because I beat the 10 count.
Yeah, so what's your opinion of present-day boxers like Vladimir Klitschko?
Well, it's funny. We got, you know, I've been seeing it on Facebook. See, I'm a techno dummy in this techno world, Mike. You know,
me too.
Well, this is how we met.
That's why we all had trouble getting into the new show tonight.
Hey, don't you start up with security codes again, Mike. No, see, I just got on Facebook, first time in my life. The last week of September passed, and because I got on Facebook, first time in my life, I met a beautiful woman. I fell in love, first time ever in my life. We live together now, and we just got engaged.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. I couldn't be happier. But really, I met you on one of the Facebook boxing sites, and So what happened was you know, like I've been doing a lot more interviews now. All of a sudden, Peter McNeely come out of nowhere with a lot more interviews because of Facebook.
Well, now everybody knows where you are and can get a hold of you.
Yeah, it's been a good thing, but you know, I've been doing for about 5 years now. Really, 20 years. I've been doing charitable appearances to help others ever since I signed that contract with Don King. But the last, like, 5-6 years, I've really stepped up and done a lot more charitable appearances a year to help others. I never turned one down.
Yeah.
Never turn one down.
So what's your opinion on present-day heavyweight?
Oh, that's what I was going to say. I've been hearing a lot about Klitschko and Fury. And I can't wait to see Klitschko knock Fury out because I don't like him. And I certainly don't want to hear the guy sing after another fight again. The guy's horrible. I can't sing for a hell of shit.
Well, I think Joe Rod agrees with you on Tyson Fury, too, because he watched him and called me and said, this guy's terrible.
You mean about his fighting or his singing?
He's awful. He talks
his
trash.
His fighting or his singing?
I haven't heard him. Oh yeah, I have heard him sing. Everything he does is terrible.
Oh,
it's just
God.
He's just a big guy. That's why he's like 6'8", right? I mean, he's a big guy.
You know,
that's it.
Vinny Vecchione taught me a lot. He said, you know, Pete, sometimes guys gotta match up. They physically gotta match up to other guys. And I will say this: we have not. You know, it's not 100%, but we have not seen a lot of guys match up size-wise to Klitschko. So, you know, it could present a little bit of a problem in the beginning, or the guy might get to go down quick. I don't know.
But the bottom line is,
I don't want to hear the guy singing again.
Yeah, but there's a little difference. The Klitschko's can fight. This guy is awful. He's really bad.
Listen, now, and I say this about the Klitschko's, and I say it about Floyd Mayweather Jr. Now, to me personally, like you can't, you know, you want to start telling me about boxing, go the other way. I know too much. I mean, I grew up around it, did it. I know too much. So the bottom line is this: styles win fights. Like people don't like Floyd Mayweather's style. And when he lean up against the ropes and hide his chin behind that shoulder and do a defensive effort, you know, and people whined about the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight. And I thought to myself, hey, Pacquiao, Mayweather won that fight easy. He won it easy. And yes, now, you know, then it came out, Pacquiao had a torn rotator cuff, which in boxing is gigantic. You cannot go into a ring boxing with a torn rotator cuff. So then, you know, don't get me wrong, I live on the Dedham side of Norwood. I don't know Freddie Roach well, but Freddie Roach grew up in Dedham. The whole Roach family grew up in Dedham. They knew my father pretty good. I met Freddie. But, you know, all of a sudden this media good guy show with Freddie and Manny came to a screeching halt when, you know, they did not disclose the guy had a torn rotator cuff. You know?
Yeah, if you're asking people to pay $100 for a pay-per-view, they ought to get a healthy fighter.
Please. That was bad. But the point being, the Klitschko's, both Klitschko's, now there's only one fight. Both Klitschko's, Floyd Mayweather Jr., they won't go for the knockout like a guy like Sugar Ray Leonard, Muhammad Ali, you know, guys like that. They knew how to put on a show.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, with Fury's mouth, Klitschko may make an exception and may want to knock him out.
Again, You know, it does, because of the size, the matchup, he's like Fury is going to just, Fury himself, because of his size, will force Klitschko to knock him out. You follow me? His size alone will force Klitschko to knock him out.
Hey, Peter, speaking of today's fighters, what do you think of Deontay Wilder?
I love Deontay Wilder. You know, now, is he young? Is he inexperienced? A little bit. Does he need some seasoning? Yeah. But I like the guy. I like the guy. Well, I enjoy watching him.
Hey, you think he'd have a chance against Klitschko? I think right there, the size matchup against Klitschko.
Matching up. But again, I mean, these Klitschko's, you know, again, they won't, they're so smart and so careful, they won't go over the knockout, but you can't fault them for that. They're smart, and they've made a ton of money. But again, they're too experienced for Deontay right now.
Yeah, it's hard to make Klitschko's and the Mayweather's fight a fight they don't want to fight because they're so good at what they do.
Exactly.
So. Hey, well, Peter, we're about out of time with you here. It's been a pleasure talking to you. I mean, you're welcome back on the show anytime you want to come back, and there'll be no security code either.
Hey, well, you know, my good pass is my buddy. He can call me anytime.
All right, I sure will.
Hey, Peter, thanks very much.
All right.
It was great. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yep, thanks, Peter. All right, Joe, let's get back to Mayweather-Berto.
Well, I want to say one thing about Peter McNeely. I'm so happy he joined us, and it was really a great conversation. And he only cursed twice, so I was very pleasantly surprised.
Yeah. But Peter, you told me you wouldn't curse at all on the radio.
No, it was great, though. Really, really great. Mayweather-Berto, I think... I think he has a better shot than Maidana because I think hand speed, you know, speed kills, as you know. He does have enough speed to make Floyd think about something, at least. I don't know how much power he has. He does have some knockouts. I don't know how much power he has. Is he going to just go in there, which I think is the way to beat Floyd? You have to go in there and just, you know, throw the kitchen sink at him. You can't play cat and mouse with him. He will win that almost every time, especially against anyone today.
I think this fight should be on. I mean, if it's on free TV, I've got no problem with Mayweather fighting Berto because it would be huge for boxing to have Mayweather on CBS instead of putting him on pay-per-view. And I know people are gun-shy about paying money for a Mayweather fight now, but do you see anybody out there do you think could beat Mayweather?
Khan, maybe. And also we talked about – who's the guy we talked about the other night?
Keith Thurman?
Yes.
Yeah.
Now,
Thurman's young yet. He's only like 24 years old. I think another year from now, though, he may be more prepared. I don't think he's real prepared right now. But I think another year, and I think he could be ready. And I don't think, and I know we've talked about this before, but I don't think there's any chance that Floyd Mayweather is retiring after this fight in September.
I don't think so either. He loves the attention, and he loves money.
Yeah. I mean, that's why he calls himself money. So what would make that? I mean, because – let's face it, they only show when he wins these bets. I guarantee he loses just as much, if not more, than what he bets. So
all you Mayweather fans who are not, I shouldn't say fans, all you Mayweather haters, you should root for Floyd to keep fighting because, you know, time beats all fighters.
Yeah, it beats everybody. The only ones it didn't beat are the guys like, you know, Rocky Marciano, Joe Calzaghe, guys that get out when they should get out. And those are the only two guys that I can remember that retired undefeated.
Right.
I think there was one or two lighter weight guys that are like 108 pounds, but we've talked about that before. If they weigh 108 pounds, I can whip them, so I'm not going to talk about them. I'm just kidding.
Well, the great Salvador Sanchez even lost a fight, didn't he? Didn't he lose once?
Well, he lost early in his career.
Right.
And once he got – I mean, he turned pro at the age of 15 too, though.
Oh, okay.
So he was fighting grown men. I think he lost one of his first seven or eight fights. He lost one or two fights in there, and then nobody touched him again. But –
you know, when I think of Floyd Mayweather, every time I think of, you know, in my mind being a longtime boxing fan, how do you beat this guy? There's really nobody. I always go back to guys in the 80s that I think would have beaten him. I mean, Floyd would have been, I think, maybe a top 10 contender, but he would not, definitely wouldn't have been undefeated. There were a few guys I thought that would beat him. But there's nobody like those guys today.
Well, I mean, if you look at the welterweight division, or even if you go lightweight division, 70s or 80s, it was a lot deeper than it is now. I mean, actually now it's deep with a lot of guys like Keith Thurman that might be good, but you don't really know yet. And, I mean, Floyd Mayweather, maybe go and fight for the middleweight title against Golovkin. That's the fight I would like to see. And, I mean, I don't think that fight – I think even if he was to lose to Golovkin and get knocked out quickly, I think he would gain more respect from that than any other fight he's had just because he would have the guts to go up and challenge him.
Well, Mayweather's that rare fighter that doesn't care about respect. He doesn't care about legacy. I really don't believe that.
Yeah, but you look at the guys that moved up. Jose Napoles did not hurt himself by going up and getting knocked out by Carlos Monzon. I mean, he just didn't. Jose Napoles was one of the greatest welterweights that ever lived. I mean, people forget that just because at the time there wasn't the kind of TV coverage, especially on a foreign fighter, as there is today, unless they were a Carlos Monzon who won 60 or 70 fights in a row. But
I would be shocked if Mayweather fought Golovkin. I would be shocked.
Oh, I would too. I don't think it's going to happen. I hope it does, though, because I really think Golovkin's underrated by a lot of people. I mean, he hasn't fought any, you know, guys that people – put it like this. He hadn't fought anybody that people that aren't boxing fans have heard of. But if you're a boxing fan, you've heard of a lot of the guys he's beat. And he's beat these guys a lot worse than anybody else did. And he fights every 3 or 4 months. You know, I mean, he's not Peter McNeely fighting 37 times in 44 months, but the guy is active as a champion. He fights top 10 guys, and it's hard to knock that. But, and remember, in August, Steve Cunningham fights Antonio Tarver.
Yes.
That's the fight we're waiting on. Yeah.
That's right. We spoke with Steve, and Steve was a great guest. And we're definitely rooting for him big time. Sorry, Mr. Tarver. I actually like Tarver, too, but since Steve is our friend now, we have to root for our friend.
Yes, we have to root for our friend. And actually, I talked to Steve the other day, believe it or not, just a name drop, and he is going to try to work it out so he can be on the Tuesday night of the week that he fights Tarver.
Oh, that would be great.
So, we can have him the Tuesday night after he beats Tarver. So.
Well, I've spoken with Marvis Frazier and Carlos Palomino. I'm sorry, that's right. You spoke with them, too. I can't name
those
guys.
But, I mean, they don't give you their private home phone numbers, though. Cause...
I have Larry Holmes' number.
No, you don't, because if you did, we'd call him right now and get him on for the last 9 minutes, because that would be a dream one. Now, and if anybody knows how to get a hold of Marvin Hagler, let us know, because that's my main one.
Absolutely. And Larry Holmes and Evander Holyfield and Mr. George Foreman, I actually have one of your grills. So I you made a dollar off of me, so at least you could call us.
That'd
be more
than a dollar. That's like $50. But hey, and once again, you're listening to the Grueling Truth Boxing Show. Every Tuesday night we'll be here. Now prime time, 9:30 to 10:30. We're now with NGSC Sports, which you can go to iHeartRadio or TuneIn, punch in NGSC Sports, and you'll have all of our shows right there. We're currently downloading a couple a day to get on there. So far, we've got Carl. If you're a boxing fan, you can go on here. Carlos Palomino, Tim Witherspoon. I think I uploaded Donnie Lalonde today. All our shows will be there. We're on Spreaker. We'll be on Zeno Radio probably starting towards the end of this week or the start of next week. So we're all over the place, Joe. We're like cockroaches.
You know, it's funny. I grew up with cockroaches. Listen, It's amazing that these guys that we've spoken to some really tremendous fighters, very well-known fighters, and they're known. Some are known for their real viciousness in the ring, and every single one of them have been very nice and gracious with us, which is a real departure from what their ring persona is. So it's interesting how fighters are.
Yeah, and it's been the same thing with the football show that me and Matt Andrew Scavage do. I mean, we haven't had a jerk yet. We had one that we thought was going to be a jerk, but he ended up not being a jerk.
Don't name drop that one.
I'm not going to name drop that one because he ended up not being a jerk. So everybody out there just had to guess who it was, and we're not admitting it even if you guess it right. So,
and you'll have to,
and also,
you'll have to listen to every single show.
And with the larger format, we can do more than one show a night now. And tonight at 11 o'clock Eastern, which is in about 37 minutes, I'll have the International World Bowl Series Weekly, which I think will be a great show tonight with Coach Tony Mangini. We got a few sports agents that are going to be on there. Also wrapped up, we will do a special Tuesday show during the day, next Tuesday, of course, at 2 o'clock Eastern time, where we'll have the super agent, one of the first big-time agents in sports history, Lee Steinberg, of Jerry Maguire fame.
Yeah, that's no small potatoes. He is big time. That is a really great, a great get, as they say.
What does that mean, we're big time?
We're getting there. I'm still waiting for the check from NGSC. Aren't they sending us a check soon?
Well, if Ralph Garcia is listening, I know he's doing a show right now, but Ralph, if you're listening, Joe was wanting some money. So.
Didn't you tell me Ralph's from the Bronx also?
Yes, he is from the Bronx also, and he's a Mets fan.
Ralph is a tremendous guy.
I know. Ralph, I mean, this means now that I know both Mets fans in this world.
That's right. And the Mets won tonight for both of you Mets fans listening out there.
Well, that would be you and Ralph, but I think Ralph's doing a show. So you just told a bunch of people that did not give a damn at all. But, and hopefully we won't get in trouble from Peter dropping the F-bomb. So.
No, well, you know, we're not on a delay, are we? Well, I guess.
But if you think about it, though, I've said Peter like 50 times in the last 55 minutes.
That's right. That could be misconstrued very easily in this politically correct society.
So actually, I'm on here saying Peter all the time. I got my Confederate underwear on, so.
You're questioning my military service.
And when we get off here, before we do the International World Bowl Series Weekly tonight, I'm actually going to watch an episode of the Dukes of Hazzard.
Wow, that's really, you're going too far.
Yeah, I know. That shit was stupid as hell.
It really was dumb.
Yeah, but the Daisy Dukes were a very good idea.
Yeah, Catherine Bach was, yes. Fill in the blank in a positive way.
You at a loss for words now, Joe.
Yeah, I really enjoyed talking to him. Getting back to Peter McNeely, I really enjoyed talking to him. And what I went back and watched the fight again. You find it on YouTube, everyone. And you could actually watch the fight and just go back to your business, watch it during a commercial because it doesn't last very long. But the good news, the great thing about this, and I mean this seriously, McNeely really was not afraid. He went right out of Tyson. And if you look at Tyson early on, I think he was a little surprised by it.
I think he was too. Peter's right. That was, and there I go. I said it again. But Peter was right that if you watch these, you watch Bruce Seldon. I don't know if you remember Bruce Seldon, but that was actually a unification title because Seldon was like the WBA champion and Tyson was WBC champion or vice versa. And Seldon literally just went out, wet himself, and laid down in the middle of the ring without even getting hit.
I guess,
and I think that pay-per-view cost $5 more than the McNeely one. So, and Peter was entertaining as hell before the fight. So,
I guess that statement blows our chances of getting Bruce Seldon on the show.
Well, who wants Bruce Seldon on the show? It'll be right time to call in and he'll pee his pants and just go to sleep.
Oh my goodness, Bruce, please be on the show so you can let Mike have it. I did not say that.
If Bruce Seldon's out there, I'd challenge him to come onto the show and last longer than he did on the Mike Tyson fight.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Hey, Bruce, I didn't say that. So if we run into each other, I don't know if he still lives in the Atlantic City area, but no, I didn't say that.
Yeah, there's a better chance you're running into him than I am, so. But I will be in New York. Maybe we could do a show together while we're, sitting at the computer.
That's true.
There you go. So, all right, guys, we're going to wrap it up for this edition of the Tuesday Night Boxing Show. I'd like to thank Peter McNeely for stopping by. I'd like to thank Joe Rodriguez for being one of the two Mets fans in the world.
Let's go, Mets.
Remember, top of the hour, 32 minutes. You can come back on here. You can hear it live, the International World Bowl Series Weekly. They've got a combine coming into New York City within the next month. I think it's August 12th through the 15th. We'll have some special guests on to talk about that. Thursday night, me and Matt Andrew Scavage will do our NFL show, and that will be moved up also, either to 9:30 or 10 o'clock. We're still discussing that. That will be announced tomorrow after me and Matt talk about it. So, for Mike Goodpaster and Joe Rodriguez, This is The Grueling Truth, where the legends speak. We'll see you next time.